As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Untouchable. Seriously, we dare you to try and touch him. Bob McCowan at Primetime Sports. Now. On the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Greetings, salutations. It's Tuesday, the 26th of July. I can't read. 2016. Got the year and the day mixed up. Well, I'm an idiot. I'm also Bob McCowan. That's Dave Perkins, formerly of the Toronto Star. Are you still scribbling for the Toronto Star on occasion?
No, apparently not.
Oh, wait a sec. I have to ask about that. Apparently not.
No.
Sounds like it wasn't your decision.
Oh, no. I haven't
they
for a long time.
They fired your ass?
No. Every now and then they used to ask me for stuff. But if things happen, you know, occasionally they would ask me. And if it's something with which I'm familiar, I'm happy to participate.
Now, are you allowed to say no, screw off?
Yeah, if good. I'm busy or, you know, doing something.
Or you don't feel like it.
Or you don't feel like it, sure.
Right.
But, I mean, they're banging along quite nicely without me, so that's fine.
You know what I hate about the Toronto Star?
Well, we could start a conversation, but what?
Well, no. See, I've been a Star subscriber since the beginning of time.
All right.
I mean, going back to the days when we had the telly.
The telly, okay. So, yeah.
Right. So I was always, I was a Star guy.
Right.
And I would read the telly and I would, and then the Sun came along after the telegram
folded. After the telly died, yeah. 71.
Yeah, and I read that on from time to time. And, right. I mean, it's got a good sports section. I mean, I'm okay with it.
Sure.
But I'm an investor. I invest in the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not a serious kind of guy who has the computer set up and all that stuff. I have a broker who I talk to every few weeks who tells me everything's great.
Right.
Even when it's not.
Of course.
And I pay him to tell me that.
Yes.
I don't want to know when it's bad. I've told him.
And it's never their fault when it's bad.
No, and it doesn't do me any good to know that it's bad, so don't tell me when it's bad.
Okay.
But let me know when it's good.
Yeah, of course.
So needless to say, I haven't heard from him for a while.
Right.
But what I would do is you know, your portfolio changes all the time, but I know a bunch of the stocks that I own. So I go to the Toronto Star every morning. Like, it's a ritual. Every day, I get up, I make myself a cup of tea, I go to the front door, open the front door, you know.
Pick up the paper.
Shake the cobwebs away. Pick up the newspaper, which is right on my front door.
Yeah.
Close the door, go back, get my tea, go in the backyard, and I sit and I read the paper. Read the Toronto Star.
Okay.
Now, I invariably start with the sports section, unless there's something really interesting on the front page.
Right.
And then the next place I go is to the business section. And I read the business section, literally cover to cover, which is usually only about 4 or 5 pages.
Right.
And I read the stock quotes.
Yep.
And I find the stocks that I know I have.
And curse.
Or I think I have. Yeah, and curse.
Right.
Right. Have you been there? Have I not seen you? Have you been looking over my shoulder? You know all this is going?
No, I'm guessing.
Yeah. So in the last couple of weeks, the Toronto Star has decided to eliminate listing the stocks on the Toronto Stock Exchange. Did you not even know this? This is your newspaper.
I don't look at the stock charts.
Where's our idiot producer? Did he go to get me
tea? I'm like you. I don't.
Okay, bring me my tea and then wait a sec. As a party, I got another. Go get me the business section of the Toronto Star, will you? Thank you, pal. You're a good man, Charlie Brown. He is the number one producer today.
Today.
The number one producer is on taking a few days off.
Okay.
He's smart, though. He's coming back on Friday when the producers don't do anything.
Because it's a round table.
Yeah, they don't book anything.
That's right.
Well, I don't even know why we pay them.
Well, they take advantage of getting some good food in for you.
Well, that's what they do. Sure. But they don't really do that.
Well, they're hard workers.
Anyway. So
there's no stock prices now. Now you're, you're chapped.
Yes, I am. Chapped is an excellent word. I am chapped. And I want you to do something about it. As a highfalutin, there it is. There's smart money. So here, let me show you. Don't you look at it.
There's a picture of Dr. Spock on there.
About the whole damn paper.
Now what?
Don't need the whole paper.
What has Dr. Spock done now?
How to be successful at the art of complaining.
Did you write that article?
I did not. So here is what they have reduced the market report to. This. Look at this. Jen, get a shot of this.
That's enough to piss off the good fairy, isn't it?
It is. And I ain't the good fairy. Zoom in.
What I'm guessing is...
Jen, are you awake? Yeah.
Is most people...
No, zoom in on this. Don't zoom in on Perkins.
Most people would get their little handheld machine... And shut off the Pokemon Go for a minute so they could look up
at the top. At the top.
They'd look up their stocks then.
Here, just at the top. That's what you want to look at.
That's what I'm guessing.
On the markets. That's really what you're looking at.
That's for the short attention span generation. That's not you.
Well, I'm interested in what the markets are doing, but I'm interested in what my stocks are doing. Did I make money? Did I lose money? Did I tie?
And you can't obtain this information on your telephone?
Well, I'm sure there are many.
Up to date?
You see, there are many ways I'm sure I could.
Right.
I could go on my computer and probably call it up.
Yep.
But I have decided to support my local newspaper and the various and sundry ink-stained wretches that it employs by purchasing this formerly fine publication every day for my entire bleeping life. Since the day I moved out of my mother's house, it's a long time ago.
Long time ago.
I have paid my 10 cents, 25 cents, 50 cents, dollar 50, whatever the hell this thing costs now. I don't even know what it costs now.
Well,
it's so expensive, they don't even put the price of the paper on the front page anymore. Remember, they used to do that all the time.
Is that right?
You know that. It was up here. It used to be 25 cents, 50 cents. Now, it's so expensive, they don't even put a price on it. Which means somebody's getting it for a lot less than what I'm paying for it.
Employees. We used to just, there were stacks of them, we'd just take them.
Well, no, I know. And see, I could come to work and get it. They're delivered here. Comics are on the back, too.
Why is Mr. Spock on the front page of the business?
Well, you're more interested in Mr. Spock.
Well,
I want the Toronto Star to start printing, go back to printing the stock market report on a daily basis. It's not that big a deal. It took up about a half a page. I'm sure it comes spitting out of some computer. No editor can screw it up. No junior editor. By the way, the mistakes in the newspaper these days are pathetic.
I have no doubt.
Nobody proofreads anything anymore.
I don't think the staff is there. There certainly isn't the staff that they used to be. I know that.
I'm looking at this article.
Tough times for newspapers.
I don't think it has anything to do with Mr. Spock.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. But look, you know what I want you to do? I want you to take
now
this.
Now what?
I want you to take this home, and you can examine the Dr. Spock stuff. All right?
Yeah.
Because you're interested.
Could I lend you 20 instead?
No, you can have it for free.
All right.
Don't you get the Star delivered?
Yes, I still do. Now you
clearly didn't look at it this morning.
You said something a little while ago. You were a Star or a Telly. There was two ways to determine what kind of people Torontonians were in the old days.
You were black or you were white.
You were a star person or a telly person.
Blue.
Or, and here's the other one, you'll remember this.
Globe Mail.
You were a Shopsy's person or a Switzer's person.
Oh, yeah.
Remember? There was two great delis in Toronto.
I was Shopsy's.
Shopsy's and Switzer's.
Were you Switzer's?
And yeah, I was a Switzer's guy. But, you know, now that I like Shopsy's, but Sam Shopsiewicz was a good... Man about town, a raconteur, quite a...
My dad played baseball for him.
Member of the sporting crowd.
The Beaches League.
Do we have time for one great Shopsy story?
Sure you do.
Shopsy, remember in the old days, the C&E, the exhibition would bring in big name entertainers.
Oh, yeah.
To run the grandstand show.
Yeah.
And Shopsy kind of knew them all because they'd go to his restaurant. And one year, Danny Kaye was coming in. Remember Danny Kaye?
Sure, I remember Danny Kaye.
This is a guy in the 50s.
Did a ton of movies.
Long before
red hair.
Long before the Gardner Expressway was built, Shopsy, somehow it's knew Danny Kaye was coming in on a flight at Malton Airport, they called it. And Shopsy said, Pearson now, Shopsy said, well, I'll go out and pick up Danny at the airport.
Right.
So somebody said, great. You know, so Shopsy drives out to the airport, meets Danny Kaye, the famous Danny Kaye, and he's going to drive him to the Royal York where he was staying or whatever hotel he was staying.
Right.
And Shopsy says to Danny Kaye, say, Danny, do you mind if I just make a little pit stop at home on the way? Because I just got to pick something up on the way down to the hotel. And Danny says, yeah, no problem. Shopsy then drives to Casa Loma, parks in front of it, runs in, turns the circle for 30 seconds, runs back out and says, I got it. Thanks now, Danny. And just gets in the car and drives. And Danny Kaye
looks at Casa Loma and says, Loma, this is where he lives?
This is Sam's house? And it's one of the great Toronto stories, I think, from way back when.
That's great. I like that. Sam Shopsiewicz.
Yep.
Was definitely a man about town.
And he sponsored a lot of ball teams. I remember you said your dad pitched a fastball.
And the Old Beaches League.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're showing our age, but that's fine. It's a good story.
Well, I don't remember it. I mean, it was before my time.
Beaches fastball. I can remember Richmond Hill Dines winning the world championship.
I remember that too, but that was 60s, 70s, yeah.
Well, I think 71 or 2.
Yeah.
They were great. Pete Landers was the pitcher.
My old man won the world championship.
Great fastball.
At least twice, maybe three times.
Great fastball back then.
I think with Tip Top Taylors once.
Yeah.
And with Woolly Bus Lines out of Buffalo, New York. And then with Fred Ashers in Vancouver. I think all three of those teams won the world championship.
That's pretty good.
Well, they used to have, now I'm told this story by my mom. They would have 25,000 people at the beaches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For a game, for a fastball game.
Yeah.
Softball. Smaller ball.
Yeah.
1 inch smaller.
But, and that was real good caliber ball too. I can remember, in the 70s, I would see games down there. That's a long time ago, but I don't even know. Is there still?
I don't know if the Beaches Fastball League even exists anymore. I mean, it certainly doesn't exist in the manner
in
it
the
did.
In the scale, no.
No, it had. I mean,
I'm sure it does. I'm sure there's something down there.
Well, yeah,
because the diamond's in good shape, but
yeah, but they used to have like big stands and big crowds.
Oh, sure.
And you remember the King of the Court, Eddie Fainer?
Oh, Eddie Fainer. Well, I always say world's greatest athlete, scratch golfer. You know, he'd go and shoot 71 any golf course, anywhere. Tremendous pool shooter. He was a world-class pool player, scratch golfer, the greatest pitcher, maybe the greatest athlete ever.
I'll tell you a story.
I'll tell you
a private. Did I tell you the story?
You told me the story about your dad and Eddie Fainer.
And Eddie Fainer, king of his court.
Yep.
Fainer walked off. It's such a great story.
Yeah, there's so many good ones.
Today, the Toronto Blue Jays acquired Melvin Upton, Jr. You can call me Ray or you can call me Jay, but I'd rather you called me Melvin. An outfielder,
mm-hmm.
A position for which there is no apparent vacancy at the moment, but is this a deal to strengthen the bench or a deal looking ahead to the future?
Yes, to both.
You'll need your headset for this.
Absolutely.
Paul Severino is the host of MLB Tonight on MLB Network. Hello, Paul. How are you?
I'm good, gentlemen. How are you?
Good. It's not the biggest deal in the world. Melvin Upton Jr. was considered a real prospect. I mean, a real serious prospect. What is the general opinion of Melvin Upton Jr.? Has that time now passed and he is what he is? Or is there still, in anybody's mind, the possibility of this guy breaking out?
I mean, I'm going to go out and venture to guess that no one thinks that he's going to live up to the expectations of what you'd have as a second overall pick, which he was in 2002. But I think that he's a different player probably mentally now than he was with the Rays. I mean, he certainly had his superstar years. He signed what you might consider to be a superstar mm-hmm. contract.
That's right.
And then once he got to Atlanta, I mean, he hit rock bottom. 184 in his first year in 2013 in Atlanta, 208 his second year in Atlanta, finally figured something out, it looks like, the last couple of seasons in San Diego. So, you know, again, he's I'd be shocked if he got to that superstar level again. I think in terms of what he can provide for this club, then they don't need much of it. But you know, more offense if he can continue to do what he did. He's played in the AL East before. He knows the rigors of what that means. He's played in pennant races in the AL East before. He's got some flexibility in the outfield, so you could take Bautista off his feet. You can maybe give Pilar a little bit of rest or insurance in case, you know, Pilar runs through one of the many walls that he normally runs through.
Yes, we've seen that. Yes.
Or take Saunders off his feet. So, you know, there's a couple of things there. They're not paying him that much. So, you know, kind of a low-risk type of move, I guess.
All right, so I understand San Diego's in a selling mode. They're not going to make the postseason. This is a process that the San Diego Padres have been through many, many, many times in the past, and the Blue Jays have been beneficiaries of deals that the Padres have made in the past and dumping players, essentially. But this isn't really that kind of a dump, Paul, because according to all reports, the Padres will pick up more than 80% of his contract over this year and next year. So what's their motivation?
Well, I think from having spoken to a few people, I think that what it might be is the prospect that they got back. The Padres maybe viewed the prospect a little bit better or a little bit higher than the Blue Jays did. And while $5 million doesn't sound like much in baseball terms, you know, maybe $5 million is a big deal for a team that doesn't have a huge payroll. And if you can, you know, it's just like pinching pennies. You know, for you and I, if we can save 10 bucks a month on our cable bill, that's a big deal. For somebody who makes, you know, $50 million a year, 10 bucks is really no big deal. So, you know, maybe it's something along those lines where any penny saved is a penny earned for the Padres. And again, if they like the prospect more than the other team, you know, so be it.
Maybe, except it's $5 million less what you pay the guy who replaces him. Because he was playing in San Diego too, you know. You got to find somebody else to play.
Yeah, I get it, and they have some prospects that are on the way up. Hunter Renfro is a guy who they like a lot. I saw him. I've seen him in the Arizona Fall League in years past. I saw him in Charlotte for the AAA All-Star Game a couple of weeks back. So they think highly of him, and you know, again, it clears a roster spot for that guy. And we all know the importance of prospects these days. So with little to no service time for Hunter Renfro, they'll get him on the cheap for the time being, and he's a piece that they like an awful lot. I'm sure teams ask about him whenever dealing with trades with the Padres, but you know, I think he's got the makings of a cornerstone piece in San Diego for years to come. So I think if you're looking at outfielders and clearing roster spots, that Hunter Renfro might be the guy.
I think the other thing that maybe gets overlooked here is that Blue Jays are below 500 against left-handers. And this guy has an OPS of around 900 against left-handers. So he can help a little bit, I think. And then he is a spot for next year if they lose both corner outfielders to free agency.
Well, that's a big issue,
there.
I think, yeah.
He's there at a reasonable rate.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. That's what this was all about. It's not a blockbuster move by any stretch of the imagination, but it's a little bit of insurance if Bautista ends up somewhere else, if Encarnacion ends up somewhere else. That's kind of the longer term plan, I guess, that would be in place with this particular move, even though that longer term is only through next year with Upton's deal. But again, that's for 2017. But for 2016, like I said, he's going to provide a little bit of offensive insurance. He's going to provide some bench options. He's going to provide some rest for the guys that they have in the outfield now. So, you know, again, I think, like I said, low risk, high reward type of move. And, you know, again, it's maybe in Toronto it's on the front page of the papers, but, you know, many other cities it may not be. But that doesn't mean that it's not going to be a move that pays off, you know, if or when this team gets to the postseason.
No, and you understand there are many fans that would be puzzled by this move because the need of this team is a starting pitcher and somebody to help in the bullpen. Now, can they get along without either of those two things? Well, that's a debatable issue. Maybe they can. But those would be needs that immediately fans would go, okay, I get that. You know, well, let's see what this guy can do. But because of the circumstances, those are the two positions where we're looking for deals. When we find out they've made a deal and it's for an outfielder, it does make all fans shake your head a little bit and go, well, okay, that's nice, but this guy essentially is going to play every third or fourth day, maybe as a replacement guy, maybe pinch hit, maybe be a late defensive replacement occasionally. But how much is he likely to contribute to what the Blue Jays hope is a playoff run this year? And the answer is not much.
Again, I totally get that. And if it were August 1st and this was the only deal that they made, then, yeah, I think you're scratching your head an awful lot more. If this was Melvin Upton for your top prospect, I think it's probably going to make you scratch your head a little bit more.
Sure.
But when it's a guy who's so far down on the depth chart with still a week or so to go, and, you know, I don't think that they're done and they're saying, all right, here we go. This is the team. These are the
right
guys that are going to bring us a ring. I think that there's still going to be plenty of calls made, and, you know, however they're going to handle Sanchez going forward is going to create, even with the guys you have in place, if you rode them until the end of the regular season, you probably need starting pitching. But obviously with Sanchez being limited in innings going forward, that increases the need. So, I don't think that the Melvin Upton move is the crowning jewel of the 2016 trade season.
Clearly.
For the Toronto Blue Jays.
Paul Severino, the host of MLB Tonight on the MLB Network, is with us. Yesterday, the Cubs got Aroldis Chapman from the New York Yankees. It is an obvious uptick for the Cubs, who aspire to be World Series champions. But is it an acknowledgement by the New York Yankees that their season is not going to produce a postseason and therefore they are sellers?
Not yet at all.
I agree.
Because they still have Andrew Miller, who many teams are after, number one, and number two, many teams who, if you just were drafting right now, would like to have in the ninth inning. So they have him in the ninth. They've moved Betances up to the eighth. Those guys are used to those particular roles from last year. And then you get Adam Warren back in the deal, too. And Adam Warren didn't have the best of runs with the Chicago Cubs, but he made himself incredibly valuable with the New York Yankees. So now he's back. They're excited to have him back. He probably slots into the seventh. So, you know, again, Adam Warren, Betances Miller is not necessarily Betances Miller Chapman, but it's still a nice 1-2-3 at the back end of a bullpen, back end of a game. For the Chicago Cubs side of things, this was what, Sunday, basically, late Saturday night. Sunday, we started hearing rumblings, and it comes down officially on Monday afternoon. It seemed like sometime Sunday there was, the hang-up could be if the Cubs can't lock them down long-term, they may not do the deal. And they went with it anyway. And not only that, they gave up quite a bit. And again, prospects are just that, and Chapman is a proven major leaguer. I totally get it. I was a little bit surprised that it was not just two top five prospects and Chapman and be done with it, that it was two top five prospects, two other guys, one guy in Warren, who can help the Yankees now, and they have another outfielder in the mix too. But I think if you're the Cubs,
it's a big price,
a move that you have to make, have to make. Nothing is guaranteed, even though they have banked on, and many teams do, bank on tomorrow with prospects. Tomorrow is today for the Chicago Cubs, and this was a no-brainer. They may have overpaid, but you know what? If they end a 108-year World Series drought, I don't think anybody's going to care about the price tag.
Right. At least of all Theo Epstein. I mean, his sainthood will be assured in two cities now.
Oof.
Forever.
What'd that be? That would be, what's 108 plus 86?
Yeah.
What's that, 196 years worth of curses that he's helped lift? That's not too bad.
Maybe he could help the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Cleveland next, and he'll have the Indians out.
Indians, that's right. When you look at this trade, as great a piece as Chapman was in New York, he's almost worth more to the Cubs than he is to the Yankees because of just what you mentioned. They still have the eighth and ninth inning guys. And the Cubs didn't necessarily have that much power at the end of the bullpen. And the Yankees have now got, they have to find a seventh inning guy. That's it.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. I think that if I'm running the Yankees, and I am not, nor will I ever, but if I'm running the Yankees, this is not the last move that I make either, and I don't think it will be. I think the way that they're constructed right now, they're not a bad team, but they're not a great team. And a lot of time, in this day and age, in the middle is not where you want to be.
Right.
You do not want to be the 82 win team, the 83 win team who misses the second wild card by three games. And if you're just fighting to get to one game, that can hamper you too going forward. So I just sit there and wonder, are the Yankees going to mortgage any bit of their future for the hope of leapfrogging four or five teams just to get into one game? I don't think that's smart. I think if there was ever a time for the Yankees to sell everything at the major league level, now would be it. And again, I don't run the club, but now would be it. I think that there are some tradable assets that they've got right now that can bring back a nice haul. They obviously did that with Aroldis Chapman. If they, you know, get the right package for Andrew Miller or Dellum Betances or Carlos Beltran or Brett Gardner or whoever else may be out there that has some form of value, that they can make this team younger and more athletic and bring down a payroll that's been exorbitant the last decade plus and still put out a winner, because they, you know, by all, from all reports, have a pretty strong core of guys coming up through the system. They'll get Greg Bird back next year. Yep. He should, you know, figure to take over for Teixeira at first. Aaron Judge in the outfield. Luis Severino has been up and down, but he's back in a bullpen role right now. So, you know, I think that they've got the pieces. They haven't, with the trade yesterday, they have three or four really good shortstops, young shortstops in the system too. So I think what they need is something they haven't had for a while, and that's roster flexibility and money flexibility too.
With Paul Severino of the MLB Network. So I don't doubt for a second that there are many, many, many phone calls from general managers about the availability of Miller and what the price is. How many guys are asking about Betances? Like, what is the chance? What are the chances that Miller stays and Betances goes?
This is just me talking.
Yeah.
From nowhere near the organization, other than the fact that our studios are a half hour away from the Bronx.
Gotcha.
I personally, the way that Betances has been used, and I'm not knocking Joe Girardi, but just in general, with the way that young arms seem to go, from having worked with many a pitcher and kind of taking what they have to say, you might want to trade him while he's got value, and I'll put it that way. You know, I'm not going to, you know, wish an injury on him at all, but if you're the Yankees and his value's pretty high and you know you're not going to win right now and it seems like everybody and their mother's throwing 98 miles an hour, you know, they've done a great job in years past of finding bullpen arms, right? Mariano Rivera is the greatest closer that's ever lived, you know, among the greatest pitchers that have ever lived.
No, I don't disagree.
What are they ever going to do when he retires? Robertson was pretty good.
Yeah.
Robertson got himself a four-year, 40-some-odd million-dollar contract. Then they bring up Betances. They're able to sign Andrew Miller. You know, they've been very good at finding arms at the back end of a bullpen. So if you can get a team, the Nationals, the Giants, the Rangers, if you can find a team that needs a bullpen arm, I don't know if they deal with the Blue Jays or not, but you might get a nice package back, and it'd be something to consider.
For Betances.
Yeah.
I don't disagree. I everybody talks about Miller, and I think the guy you'd shop, I'd shop Betances more.
Yeah. If you're going to have a for sale sign on your front yard, everything better be for sale.
Yeah, well, I get that. Chris Sale, what the hell is going on inside his head? and is this Chris Sale saying without saying, I want out?
I see it from both sides. I see the lead up to this whole mess from his side, and I see the suspension and everything else from the team side. It's great that teams want to, you know, make every little last penny that they can, and here's eight different hats that we can wear and nine different uniforms and throwback days and this, that, or whatever. I get that. But, you know, again, having never been a major league pitcher, it's always kind of been the custom that the starting pitcher picks, if it's 97 degrees outside, let's not wear our black uniforms today. Let's not wear our black tops.
Yeah.
You know, let's try to find out any edge that we could possibly get. So, you know, from talking with other pitchers, that's kind of how it's always gone, that the starting pitcher gets his choice of uniform. And if it's got a different color is one thing, right? But if it's going to be a different, completely different uniform with a different feel,
different material,
floppy collar. I mean, nobody's pitching in polo shirts.
No, I know. We've seen them.
I get why he'd be upset. I obviously don't really understand him feeling the need to cut 35 uniforms in the clubhouse, and I do understand why the team had to reprimand him. I get it. I don't think it goes much further than that. I don't think that this was the this is going to get me traded and I'm getting out of here and I'm going to go pitch for a winner. I don't think that was part of it at all.
Last question. The Dodgers have issues. We understand. But they also have had a monster payroll. So they have the ability and the willingness to spend money. Are the Dodgers actually going to shop and buy over the next week? Or do they feel like the problems are too many? There are too many holes in the dike. We don't have enough fingers to fill them all.
I think that a lot of it depends on the health of Clayton Kershaw.
I think all of it does. Yeah.
Yeah, all of it. Absolutely. They have the pieces, young players, to make a deal to bring in, whether it be a Chris Archer, whether it be a Chris Sale, whether it be, pick your frontline starter who may or may not be available.
Right.
They've got the pieces to get those guys. But the question is, if you have, look how far they got with Kershaw and Greinke. And it wasn't as far as they wanted to go.
That's right.
So if you don't have Kershaw and you only have, and again, that's with all due respect, you only have Chris Archer or Chris Sale at the front end of that rotation.
Still not enough.
It's still not enough.
That's right.
So if they find out that Kershaw needs back surgery or whatever, I don't think that they go and, sell the farm for pieces. Maybe they just kind of stand pat or figure out what they can get for this guy or that guy or whatever, maybe lighten up the payroll somehow, some way. But I think that unfortunately, and fortunately too, I don't know about fortunately for an injury, but Kershaw's gotten this team to where they're at. And they've played well without him. They've played very well without him.
Yes, they have.
Surprisingly well. But I don't know if it's enough to
I don't think so. Yeah,
get to the postseason, win a postseason series or two or three.
Paul, we always love having you on. You're a good man for joining us. Thank you, pal, and we'll talk again somewhere down the road.
I appreciate you guys. Anytime.
Take care.
Paul Severino is the host of MLB Tonight on the Major League Baseball Network. You can catch it on your Rogers Cable subscription. When we come back, my friend Keith Pelley has lost his mind. He is, chief executive of the PGA European Tour, and he's now talking about embracing new formats in golf, including... And he's going to have to explain to me because neither one of us understands it. 6-hole tournaments. I'm pausing to let that sink in. We'll talk to Keith Pelley when Primetime continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
Did Bob McCown just say what I think he said? You can rewind Primetime Sports Podcast when you subscribe at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. On demand. On demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Well, I won't back down. No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of
Pelley owes me money. He's not answering his phone. It's the only explanation I have. I don't remember that he owes me money, but he must.
Is this a golf wager?
Well, I don't even remember. He probably doesn't owe me money, but he's not answering his phone right now. And so I'm thinking, he says, oh, God, I owe McCowan money.
Maybe he's in bed. It's, it's 10 o'clock.
Yeah, that'd be bedtime for him.
Yeah.
Have you got Joan's number? Call Joan. Call his wife.
Well, we can just make fun of six-hole tournaments.
We'll talk to him. Well, you know what? Maybe we'll try him a little later. In the meantime, pull out your stats.
6-hole tournaments with a 3-hole cut.
That's so
we'd like to see.
I mean, this is the topic that we've, you know, we've talked to death about. I know about many of you are bored to tears.
Sanchez.
About right. Sanchez and innings pitched and all that. And my position on it has always been poppycock, who cares? You know, you're trying to win a championship. He wants to pitch. Let him pitch. I mean, if his arm starts to hurt, if something tweaks, sure, you can shut him down.
Yep.
I would expect you to shut him down. But to try and predetermine how many innings a guy is going to pitch to try and save his career, a career that may not even be remotely in jeopardy, is Looney Tunes, in my opinion. Now, my friend Mr. Perkins did a little research, as he is occasionally wont to do, to reference some former Blue Jay pitchers and how they were brought into the system.
Yeah.
So.
Good starters who came up through the bullpen. We've talked about this before, sure.
And this is Sanchez's MO.
Yeah.
You know, came up, was a starter, had, I don't know how many starts, 7 or 8 starts. And then I think he had an oblique. Didn't he have an oblique problem?
I believe so, yeah.
And then sat out for a while. Then they brought him back, but they didn't bring him back into the starting rotation. They brought him back into the bullpen for the last, I don't know, 4 months of last season, and he was great, but he's a starter. So he won the job out of spring training. Now the issue is how many innings can they pitch him and feel comfortable or safe? My Chris response is however many he wants.
Right.
Now, so let's do a little history lesson.
I looked up some, because I remember all these pretty good pitchers, Stottlemyre, Wells, Key, Pat Henken, coming up.
Cy Young Award winner.
Yeah, sure, as relievers. And reasonably durable guys, you know. Wells had a terrific career. He won 250 games if you count the postseason, you know. He had a terrific career. And all of these guys were brought along reasonably slowly. I don't want to get bogged down in numbers, but the biggest single jump was Jimmy Key. And I think a caller pointed this out last time we were talking about this. In Key's rookie year, he had 63 games, 62 innings. He was kind of a loogie, left-handed one-out guy.
Yep.
The next year, he went into the rotation, pitched 212 innings. And you say, now, there's a huge jump of 150 innings, except the only difference is
he had pitched a lot in the minors.
He had pitched more than 190 innings in one season in AAA the year before.
Yeah.
So he had been built to that point. Todd Stottlemyre, 98 innings in his rookie year with 16 starts, 127 in his second year with 18 starts. The third year, full-fledged starter, 33 starts, 203 innings. So they stepped them up. They've stepped them all up. Pat Henken, you know, 3 years in the minors where he topped out at 188 innings, comes in as a rookie, pitches 70 innings in the big leagues, mostly in relief, 2 starts.
That's what they did a lot with the young starters.
And the next year, right into the rotation, 216 innings. So all these guys had a base of close to 200 innings in the minors, you know, before they...
See, the only thing, and this...
That was the one difference. But none of these guys threw 96 like Sanchez does.
Sanchez... I think Sanchez is a 100-mile-an-hour pitcher who's throwing 95.
He may well be.
Osuna is clearly a guy. We've seen Osuna hit 100, but traditionally he's 94, 95, 96 in that range. So,
and he's pitched very well, and Sanchez has been lights out. Sanchez has been terrific. I think he's better than any of us thought he would be.
Here's my point, though, Perk. And I don't have the answer to this. I was aware of the in a general sense of all these statistics. How much does it matter that, let's take Jimmy Key as an example, because he got bumped about 150 innings in 1 year, right?
In the 1 year,
right? So how much does it matter that 2 years before he pitched 190?
Well,
he goes from 190 down to 60.
Yeah, in 63 appearances.
He's pitching out of the bullpen.
Yeah, warming up a lot, yeah.
And then goes to a full-fledged starter role, pitches over 200 innings. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what, like, if you did it 5 years before, would you say it, and then he went to the bullpen?
I have no idea.
You'd say it's inconsequential?
I'm just saying, once you've done it, I imagine it's, then you have a track record of doing it. You know how to take care of yourself. You know how to,
you know how your arm
feels at 180,
maybe.
200, whatever it is.
Maybe.
You know how things feel. I'm not lobbying for this guy to, I'm just saying I understand how they want to be cautious and proceed You know, I mean, he was at 92 innings last year in the big leagues with 11 starts.
Yeah, here's what
You know, if you add 100 innings to that, that's pretty good. It gets him up around 200 innings.
Yeah, I wouldn't have much of an issue with that, but no, I think I want manageable. Him. There's a whole bunch of things going on here that I don't understand. First of all, you got him on a, you know, you think you're probably going to have an innings limit on the guy.
Because his career high is 133, counting minors.
Yeah.
From the year before.
So, why are you pitching him beyond the sixth inning in any game? Well, I don't care if he's throwing a no-hitter.
Well, because that night your job is to win.
Aha! Your job is to win every night. And if that is your priority, and I think it should be your priority, then screw the innings limit. Mm. You know, you don't get to be first in line at the water cooler all the time.
Right.
When you have that opportunity, you have to take advantage of it. You can't get to the front of the line for the water cooler and then say, I'm not thirsty.
Mm. Well, I think what they're also doing with this young pitcher is they're reaping that plan of the previous regime. Remember when they had them all in Lansing of only a couple of innings,
Sanchez was one of those guys.
He did not, and Greg Zahn's mentioned this many times, they were babied as babies, you know, as very young pitchers, and they weren't allowed
two or three of them would pitch in the same game all the time.
And that's the huge difference from some of these guys. You know, Jimmy Key was pitching 170 and 180 innings in the minors.
Right.
Boomer Wells was, you know, 135, 40 in the minors and going, you know, all these guys accumulated innings in the minors in a way Sanchez did not.
I don't want to be insensitive. I like Aaron Sanchez. I hope he has a long career.
Right.
But this is a team right now that has a chance to win.
Sure.
Right now as well. Their right fielder, their left fielder, and their designated hitter are all integral parts of this team and are all scheduled to be free agents, and the prospect of signing even one of them is uncertain.
But it isn't, you know, to me it isn't all doom and gloom. If you want to err on the side of caution and turn him into a late season reliever, now I'm looking at the playoffs and I can start Hap, I can start Estrada.
Let me stop you. I'm stopping you.
Bring this guy in.
I will buy that the minute go and get a bona fide top five starter.
Well,
because they don't have one now.
No. I mean, the first thing they need to do is get Stroman straightened out. You know, I mean, he's had a couple of good ones lately. We all understand that, and it's been overhyped, but his ERA is still 5. I mean, you want Stroman to be a reliable, consistent guy. You want him there. Hap has been all of that. Estrada, you've had a bad back. You know what a bad back's like.
That's dangerous.
I'm scared of that. As great as he's pitching, I mean, he's leading the world in opposition average and things like that. He's been sensational. But I'm a little nervous about that. And Dickey kind of makes us nervous just because of the pitch. So I'm with you.
Would you feel different if the Blue Jays had a 6-game lead right now? Do you treat Sanchez differently if they got a 6-game lead?
I believe you do.
I think you do.
Yeah, sure. But, you know, I mean, they're in a good position. They're 4 games out in the loss column, which is the only thing that matters is the loss column.
Yeah.
So they're 4 games out.
It's nothing.
With, you know, 2 months to play.
Yeah.
So
At this time last year, they were 8 games back of the New York
something
Yankees.
Like that. Now, the difference was they only had one team in front of them.
I get that.
You know, basically. And they went steamrolling past once the Price and Tulowitzki and everything sorted itself out.
Sure.
And they just got Bautista back, and that's like making a trade. You know, getting
a
dangerous middle of the order back.
That they haven't had for 5 weeks.
Sure. So that's like making a trade, too.
Well, we apologize for the absence of Mr. Pelly. He is as unreliable as the CEO of the PGA Tour in Europe as he was as the CEO of Rogers. It's the only thing I can say about it.
Can we save that on tape?
Yeah, we can save it.
I like that one.
We'll see if we can get him another day, another time. Dan Shulman in the next hour. Ross Atkins, the managing general of the Toronto Blue Jays on the Melvin Upton deal. Jason Grilley will join us as well. We've been very impressed with his performance, and he's a little chatty Cathy. Dr. Harry Edwards, Professor Emeritus Sociology, University of California, Arash Madani from the tennis, and Sid Rosenberg of 77WABC in New York. All coming up. Thanks to Perk. Back in a bit. It's primetime.